You're listening to Louisiana Insider, a superlative guide to a great state's destinations, hosted by Errol Labor, executive editor of Louisiana Life magazine.
It's our Louisiana song. It's our favorite melody. It's our Louisiana song. Hearing it echo through the cypress tree.
Have a really interesting topic today. My guess is Kenny Rubenstein, who's operates the Rubenstein store on Canal Street, corner of Canal Street in St. Charles. One of my passions in life is cities, and if you like cities, you gotta like downtowns and what goes on. I've had a particular admiration for Rubenstein's over the year. Because I can think, and I'm sure there's more than two, but I can think of two times when something bad happened at Rubenstein. I think one time there was a big vandalism thing, and then maybe after Katrina or something, but it really got whacked. And I can remember the stand of the Rubenstein family. I think it might have been David or somebody. You know, they could have easily been whining about this, but their answer was, we're going to make a stand on Canal Street. You know, they never left any doubt on that. You know, we believe in downtown, we do that. And they came back, you know, and the times they got hit hard, they came back. And they're doing even more. I mean, they're getting even stronger. And so I've always appreciated that. In fact, we're having a company meeting, and you know, I even pointed this out. I mean, it's, you got to admire Rubenstein's for its commitment. So we've never talked before. First of all, let me thank you for that, all right, because I believe that. But big news in that you all opened a new hotel there, which we'll talk about in a moment. But this is also the anniversary issue. I mean, not the anniversary issue, the anniversary year of Rubenstein's. Tell me a little bit about the beginning. How did it happen?
Well, I was 1924, and my great uncle essentially wanted to get married. So to get married, his future father-in-law felt he needed to have a job. So my family, I mean, even before that, they were into dry goods. They had a store on 600 block of Rampart Street with dry goods. And so that was the family history, is retail and selling. So he decided to open a men's shop that sold dress shirts, and the collars and cuffs were sold separately. So that was what they had. A little small, like 100 square feet shop, just selling those. And after about a year, my grandfather joined him. Because my great uncle's a great merchant, and my grandfather's a great financial guy. So they worked perfectly as a team.
So was this, you said Rampart Street, was that the first one?
Well, no, Rubenstein's opened here on St. Charles, but the Rubenstein family had dry goods stores on Rampart Street before that. That's why my uncle said, when my uncle felt like he needed a job, my great uncle, it was easy to go into retail of some sort. So selling shirts.
Right. So, and originally at some point it was called Rubenstein Brothers, and then they kept on changing, but ultimately they said, no, we're Rubensteins, and just stuck with that name.
Well, you know, yeah, when it started, it was Rubensteins. I mean, that was actually, the original name was called Rubensteins when my great uncle started it. But after his brothers joined, they changed it to Rubenstein Brothers. And then that stayed until about, I think it was 15, 20 years ago, when we tried women's clothes. And at that time, we also, cousins was in the business and things like that. And we felt that Rubenstein Brothers implied men's. I mean, it was just known as a men's store. So we felt like we felt like changing Rubenstein's to kind of take away that image of men's so that we could promote the women's a little bit. But it also worked out well because there was more than just brothers in the store. So we needed to drop that. And so that's why we're now at Rubenstein's.
Now, wasn't there a time I think during World War II that they did sell women's clothes also? And then,
yeah, I believe we've done women's clothes at least three times in our history. So give it a shot. Women are a lot more challenging than dressing men.
That area off of Canal Street, along St. Charles, I always thought of it as being a very masculine block in terms of the things that was sold there. The I don't know if they're all there at the same time, but like Mara the Hatter and Pecorni's, and you had one of the the men's clubs there, and even Cobb, which was a German restaurant, and German food is kind of masculine, you know. So that was.
No, I think you're right. I mean, even when we started, when we were the little store, I mean, they had a shirt shop, they had a cigar store, they had I can't remember what the other store was. It was, and so in a bank. So I mean, it was. I could see what you're saying. It has been kind of a masculine corner for a long time. You go to the next block, you go to Adler's, and then you get the jewelry.
And of course, this was before women became such a dominant part of the workforce too. So
absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. The word haberdasher. All right, I was kind of looking up a little bit about it, and when I said that in Europe, haberdasher meant a small item store, like notions, like buttons and those kind of things. Whereas in Canada, in the United States, it became men's clothes.
Right. Yeah, no, it's one of those stories people have asked us many times. I actually, when I had to look it up the first time, and it was clothing related, kind of the small things they did. So I think that's why from Europe to here it translated into clothing, because a lot of the things they did in haberdashery were buttons and zippers and other clothing related items. So I think that's why the transition switched over here. It's similar to the word apothecary, which has changed its meaning from the olden days.
You know, here's the story. I doubt if you know this. My wife is involved with the Tennessee Williams Festival. And a few years ago, Alec Baldwin, who I guess has lost a little bit of his luster since then, but he was going to be one of the speakers.
Right.
And my wife and another woman went to pick up at the airport. First thing he says, can you take me to a men's store? I need to get some new clothes. So they took the Rubensteins. And money wasn't an item. So he pretty much got what he wanted, you know, and came out all dressed with that.
Yeah, we kind of consider him a friend of the store. After that, he came in a couple, he was coming, you know, several other times, sometimes just to kind of stop in and say hello.
Oh, really? Okay.
He enjoyed his experience. Yeah, he was a nice guy and enjoyed his experience enough that he has made it, you know, a decision to come in and stop in every time he's in town, which isn't often.
Oh, well, good. Okay. I'm sure in your business, you need to think about downtowns, not just in New Orleans, but in general. What is the status of downtowns now, the commercial? I mean, you see some troubling signs, but maybe, okay. I mean, what do you think? Which way are American downtowns going?
Yeah, well, overall, American downtowns, I think, I mean, we've lost a lot of downtowns in a lot of American cities, which is why I think our downtown is such a nice change. I mean, it certainly had, you know, it went down a little bit at times, but I think it is now in one of the better spots it's been in decades. I mean, things have really improved here. We've, you know, put into service a lot of the upper floors of buildings. They've redone facades all up and down Canal Street. And I think it's just great. I mean, our city is somewhat unique in the fact that our downtown is really special. You come down here and you can walk wherever you want to go. And it's not walking like, you know, country walking. I mean, you can go to anything. There's everything from sports arenas to casinos to stores to restaurants. And they're good. It's not, you know, not knocking Subway, but it's not just a Subway in the corner. You got fancy dining, casual dining, everything in between. And so our downtown is really, I mean, it's growing. There's more and more hotel rooms and even apartments and things like that. And I'm really impressed with the effort. And I will give credit to the DDD. I think they've done an amazing job of really championing downtown and really working and talking with property owners and getting them to make improvements and trying to get the city to work on code enforcements and things like that. So they've done a great job. And I think overall, even the city has come to realize how important it is down here and is putting extra effort into it. So
downtown almost has two characters to it. There is the French Quarter side of Canal Street and then the side opposite the French Quarter side of New Orleans of Canal Street. So obviously the people on the other side have the advantage of being back to in the back of the quarter, or maybe that's the disadvantage. I don't know. But the side that you're on, opposite on the French Quarter. One thing, when I heard about the hotel, I was glad to hear that you were building a hotel, because I said, well, this is good because it's going to bring more traffic, more people at night walking along that part of Canal Street, which it needs. And so you have that, and you have the Fairmont nearby, and of course the Sheraton down the block. But that makes it stronger to have that nighttime activity.
Well, it's interesting actually you mentioned that, because the DDD, one of the things they did is a count, essentially put cameras in our window and a couple other places to check traffic. And the corner of Bourbon Street Canal is the number one highest traffic spot, but ours is number two at St. Charles and Canal, which I was actually surprised at. A lot of people coming up and down, they go down St. Charles, come back up, you know, and turn on Canal. And we get a lot of traffic to there, and that's nice. And it's part of the reason for having the hotel is it's a perfect location. It's not right in the middle of French Quarter where it might be loud, or near Bourbon Street, and you got all the people walking up and down. You still have, you know, a nice quiet place, and you're easy to get to either, as you say, the French Quarter, or to walk around what we like to refer to as the American sector, you know, on our side of Canal Street. And there's just so much to do within three blocks of our hotel.
It'd be the kind of location, if I was visiting another city, that I'd want to be in. It's close to the action, but a little bit separated by it too. It's a little bit of a buffer.
The most you have to deal with is the sound of the streetcar. The red streetcar, you know, that's nice and quiet, but the green one can make some rattle. But personally, I like the sounds of trains and streetcars. So,
oh, that's a wonderful sight. I mean, when you see those streetcars going back and forth, and when they first announced that the Canal Street streetcar is going to be red, I thought that's strange, red. But no, it's wonderful. It draws a lot of attention to it. You know? And sometimes, to an intersection where the streetcars are turning and you see one going one way and one going the other way, I think it's just a beautiful sight. So, yeah. What there is not downtown anymore is the department store type of shopping anymore. You know, it used to be Holmes and Maison Blanche and Krauss up and down the line. What's the future of that kind of commerce?
Well, overall, I think the future of the big department store is not good. I mean, I think, you know, you still have all these majors out there from your Saks and your Neiman Marcus, things like that. But the reality is, customers, I mean, you've got what we refer to as mono brand stores, where you've got a brand who has their own store and they open them up to more specialty shops like ourselves, who have that personal touch. You know, we're part of the community. We interact. We know what you want. That's where everything is going. It's about that experience. And I don't think most of the department stores, those big boxes, large things, can't create that experience. I mean, you know, you do have your big box stores, which, you know, are all about the price and getting a good deal. But if you want to have that experience of shopping, of finding what you need, you want that personal touch, selected stuff. I mean, we do, you know, I call it a curated collection. We have a curated collection here. We have things you won't find anywhere else. And we know what you like. And we will, when we're in market, I don't just buy because the average 45-year-old wants this in their coat. I say, what does Earl want? What Earl, he told me he likes this. I know he likes to wear this. And I will see it and say, I got to buy some of those. And I'm going to call him. In fact, I even text people from market. Here, I got this coat. I'm getting in your size. I'm like, oh, can't wait to get it.
I know y'all take great pride in the type of personal service. Like somebody goes in and they'll have one person pretty much taking care of them all the way through and taking the measurements at the beginning. And so they have their person showing them around. That's got to make a difference.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we even created something called a style session. You can sign up for it online. You come in, you get your personal stylist. They, you know, you don't even have to shop. The idea is for you to come in. We will show you what it's about, what we do. We take your measurements. We'll give you your measurements. And then when you're ready to shop, you'll know who to come check out. Now, most of the time it turns into sales because a person signs up kind of more for an appointment because they need to buy something. But that's the idea. You're going to come in here and we're going to find out what your favorite drink is. We'll make you drink. We show you around. We try things on. Get an idea of what your style is, and in some cases, help you figure out what your style actually is, what you like. So that's what it's about.
Yeah. By the way, mine is Sazerac on the Rocks. Okay. But the
it'll be ready for you.
And on the Rocks is a bit of a heresy, I know, but that's just that's just me. Do you is your clientele, is it mostly out of town or locals?
No. We break our customer up into two groups. You've got your clientele, and then what are more your transient, you know, in and out, which the transient is mostly tourists. And at any given time in the store, probably about 75% of the actual customers are tourists, but they just buy items here and there. We have clients from all over who come here multiple times a year to shop. I mean, the bottom line is the majority of our business is done by locals here, but we have a large contingent. I got a guy in North Carolina who comes, who hasn't set foot in the store in 15 years. He buys clothes every year for me. He fits, I know his sizes. He just calls me up. This is what I need, a dress shirt to go with that blue suit you gave me. Okay, great. And I put it together and I ship it off to him. So, and then you've got guys who come in for a convention that comes every year, every 2 years. And every year they come in for that convention, they come shopping and buy from us. So it's a kind of eclectic mix. And it is a little difficult being on Canal Street to deal with that merchandise mix sometimes, because you got to have stuff. You know, we have our streetcar shirts and things like that, because the tourists like look like that. But then we also have to have the stuff our customer, our core customer, is going to want and buy. So it we can be a little bit of a split personality sometimes.
Yeah. Let's go to develop that kind of relationship though with your clientele.
Yeah.
Where can be pick up a phone and
I mean, that's what we emphasize with my salespeople, and as we hire people, is you know, this is not, anybody can make a sale. I think my great uncle told me anybody can make a sale one time to anybody. It's a question of whether they come back. And that's what we're about. We're not about making that one sale. We're about making that relationship, building that. And I mean, we want to know the names of your kids, you know, that you like Sazerac on the Rock and all those kind of things. Because whatever opportunity comes up, we want to be able to be there for you and take care of it.
That reminds me about this. I don't know if it's apocryphal or not, but the stories you hear about Commander's Palace, where somebody may have been there 15 years ago, and they go back and they ask for a table, and he said, "Would you like the same table you had last time?" You know, so
that's it exactly.
That kind of connection. How about the looking at downtown? One more factor which seems to me kind of just shaking the equation a little bit is in the office buildings, the office workforce, I suspect, is significantly smaller than it used to be, especially after COVID. Do you feel any impact of that?
Yeah, to some extent. I mean, that is definitely true that it's, we've seen a little bit change in our traffic patterns, you know, where it used to be people were downtown Monday through Friday. And now some people, you know, like you have an office, you have, let's just say 10 people in the office, you know, three of them come in on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, three of them come in on Tuesday and Thursday, you know, it's mixed. Or some, I know some of the offices that are only open Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, you know, and you can see that in the traffic pattern, because Tuesdays are still slow because they always have been. But now you see a little bit more pickup in traffic on other days, because that's when people are down. And then we've seen some drop in traffic because people aren't in the office. But we still have good traffic from there. I mean, one of the things that's counteracted it is the increase in residential in the downtown area. So we've got a lot of people who come out shopping for the day because then they live right down the street, and that's taken up a little of that slack. But we definitely don't see as many. You know, I get a guy calling me. He says, "I need this one. Why don't you come down from the office and meet me, and I'll fit it for you." He's like, "Oh, I don't go to the office for 3 days, you know. So I'll come out to your house and we'll take care of it." So, which means maybe a little bit more travel on our part.
Well, the when you talk about the people that live downtown, I assume most of those are conversions. It was probably some old office building that was converted into condos yet. So at least that's showing some kind of life now in those old buildings. I mean, I imagine successful conversion might be more economically advantaged than the business, whatever it was before. At least you got nighttime activity there and people with money who live there.
Well, I would say that, I mean, and this is more feeling than fact, but I would probably say that we have as many people coming from an office as we do coming from a resident now into the store. I mean, it's, you know, it used to be rarely, you said, you know, you work down here. No, I live down here. That happened once out of every 20 customers, maybe, you know, of our local customers. But now it's probably more half and half. I mean, there's just as many people who live here as work down here that come shopping. So that's good for business.
This might be a hard question to answer, but what's your most popular item there?
That is a little hard. I mean, our Canali clothing is our number one selling brand. Canale suits and sport coats mostly. But sport coats is our top item. It's really, I can say, in categories where I have to put it, because it's hard to give you a specific item. You do have, we have a pant by Fideli, a jean that is probably the number one selling pant, five pocket pant. It's a jersey. It's knit and it's so comfortable. So we sold the most out of a single style out of that.
How do you do with formal wear?
Actually, that's a funny question. I was just having this conversation. Our formal business has been fantastic. In fact, what's really strange, I would tell you, if I had to guess, and I've not actually looked it up, in the last 20 years, we sold 3 tails, a full formal, you know, outfit for the Rex ball type of thing.
Yeah.
In the last year, we probably sold 20. I mean, it's strange. I don't know why suddenly everybody wants these dresses. And we don't stock it. We have to make it or order it out of Italy. And so in the last 3 days, in fact, we have ordered from Italy 3 different tails, 3 different days. Because they're like, I got to have it. I want the Rex ball and I need this. And I'm like, oh. All right, well, this is the only way we're going to get it.
That reminds me, I don't know if it's a joke or if it's true, but that that New Orleans leads the nation in the sale of formal wear, but it's also one of the poorest cities in the country too, you know? So
I would say it's true. I mean, I know when I talk with vendors, I mean, like I say, Canale, we've been wearing these tails, and he's asking me what's going on there. Why? You know, they don't even get that many orders in a year, so... For tails. So yeah, we do a lot of formal, and it's particularly at the time of year, because some people, obviously November, December, have a nice increase in formal wear, but we have it all the way through February, and then we'll even have it, of course, we do a lot of weddings, so the summertime we get a lot of nice business.
Yeah.
In that April, May period.
Now you're a, I hope I'm not violating a secrecy here, but you were vice president of the crew of Orpheus.
And yes.
How many people ride an Orpheus parade?
We have a little over 1,500 people.
Okay. That's a lot of tuxedos right there. Do they buy them here or they buy them home?
Oh, trust me. I mention it all the time. But most of them, actually, our riders don't have to wear a tuxedo when they get to the ball. It's their guests. So,
okay.
I definitely have my share of Orpheus guests who come in and buy some tuxedos.
Yeah. You know, when I first heard, when Orpheus first started, you know, that's kind of like a traditionalist, you know, New Orleans parades, it should be New Orleanians who are doing it. And here are these new crews, but man, they're a big economic impact. And I was at some place, someone in Florida, and there was some guy there. And you say, oh, you're from New Orleans? Yeah. I belong to Orpheus, and me and my club, we all go down to Mardi Gras, the Imagine. And these all people, you know, have a little bit of money, right?
Yeah,
and you imagine it could probably come by for at least four days while they're here, in addition to what they spend. But it's got to be a huge economic impact.
Yeah, well, that's part of why I helped form this crew. I mean, I was a founding member, was there that first day when Harry came up with the concept, because we wanted to be able to keep people in town through Tuesday. You know, a lot of people would leave on Sunday. We want to put a big parade on Monday so they'd hang around and have it open to anybody. And anybody didn't just mean women and men and all that and different religions or whatever, but it meant people from out of town. Anybody can come participate in this Orpheus. We used to say, 30 years ago, we'd say, if your check clears, you're in. That's your membership requirement. But, I mean, that's part of the business side. We need to capitalize and make, keep that economic engine going. And I think it's done that, and it's been fantastic, the amount of revenue, I think, that is generated from having a big parade on Monday.
Whereas before Orpheus, people might have come in for the weekend and then left on going back home Monday morning and not stayed over Mardi Gras.
Yeah. Now it's with 35, we have, 5,000 people and more at the ball. We get 1,500 people riding. It's a lot of people generating a lot of money. So
are you all doing much online business?
We do not. Our business is really, we do in the sense that our customers email us and we send pictures. We like to call it a custom catalog page. We put things together for customers because we know them so well. We've got that relationship. So, people call us from, as I mentioned the customer before, they call us from all over the country. You know, this is what I need. put pictures together. We text them. We do live chats, FaceTime, and all that, and take care of them that way. So
that really is personalized, and even online, it's personal communication.
Exactly, that's what it's all about, is that personal communication.
As wonderful as a Canal Street experience can be, that's, I guess it's true with all urban downtowns, crime is always a problem, and I know you all have been victims of it too. Do you feel like good things are happening, or is there any promise? Is there any hope?
Oh, there's plenty. I mean, it's one of the things that irritates me the most. I mean, I can tell you, I've never felt unsafe walking around here. As my favorite saying goes, I had a customer call me, and they were like, "Is it safe in the French Quarter?" I said, "Are you going to be drunk at 2 a.m. in the morning in the French Quarter? Then you'll be fine." I mean, it's not that different from other downtowns. I mean, just at night on a street and you're by yourself, life isn't safe in this world like that. But downtown, I mean, it's prettier, it's beautiful. Like, we've done things, there's security, there's police. It is not unsafe down here. It's not, it's clean. We got the DDT clean team coming through, making sure the sidewalks are all spiffy, and retailers and the other storefronts, we're always maintaining our properties and keeping them in good shape. And, you know, it's really a great afternoon. You come down here, you can wander Canal Street, you can wander through the French Quarter, you can walk through the American Sector, CBD, and get great bites to eat. Got entertainment from your Sazerac house to the aquarium. It's just, I think that downtown is doing very well and flourishing. And I'm always disappointed that the media tends to highlight the negative. I mean, I'm not saying it's, and I'm not dogging the media per se. It's just, it's much more of there's not a lot of, "Hey, guess what great just happened?" There's much more of, "Oh, this is terrible tragedy. This happened." And I don't think they should stop reporting those things. I just think that needs to be more conversation with the people on the street, having retailers talking to us about what's going on and how wonderful life is down here.
Well, no, it's been a standing criticism about, well, in New Orleans, it's dirty, it's all cluttered. But if people come to Mardi Gras, they're here that Tuesday, and they leave Wednesday, it is cluttered. I mean, the streets are a mess. Okay, they got bead remnants and cups and everything else.
Yeah.
But if they come back Thursday, it's in a different city, because they do an amazing job of cleaning it up.
It's always the most amazing thing, is that work they do. I mean, I am always stunned when I come in on Wednesday morning or Thursday, and I'm like, "What happened to Mardi Gras?"
Yeah.
It's a first issue already. It's gone. But it's, you know, look, downtown is a family place. This is a place to come down, you know, do your shopping, do your eating, and you know, I can't say it enough about how this store, that's what it's about. It's about building those relationships. And we have employees that have been here for 42 years, 47 years now, James. And you know, I mean, that every day I hear about people talking about how their grandfather shopped with us, fathers, and you know, how they used to come down here, do this and that, and that can still be done. You can still come down here, spend the day with us, and enjoy yourself.
When you see pictures of the classic old ways that men used to dress, like with the bowler hats or the straw hats and all that, I guess you all saw those kind of things too at one time.
Yeah, well, actually, one of my favorite pictures is downstairs. It's a Eudor Welty photograph taken, and it's got a shot of the store behind him. And this is when the store was new, obviously. And you see all these people, women in their dresses, men in their ties and their three-piece suits and their hats. And they're standing on the curb, and there's a rope going across. And, you know, everybody was always like, "Oh, what are they doing there?" They were waiting for Mardi Gras. They were waiting for a parade to come by. You didn't dress in T-shirts and shorts to go see a parade. If you went out of the house, you had a tie and a suit coat on. You had a dress and your jacket, that kind of thing. And, I mean, it just – that was the days. Now, obviously, I'm not saying everybody should wear suits all the time, but – that's what it's about. It's about respecting the people you're going to interact with and dressing for the occasion.
Yeah, you can learn a lot from those old-time pictures about Mardi Gras. Like, what they were doing is that they were more dressed up. What they weren't doing, what they were not doing, was waving their hands for throws, because throws weren't that important back then.
People, that's true,
dressed up, they go out there on the corner and watch the parade and actually look at the design of the parade.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the Sazerac House because when I was thinking about your family's hotel, it kind of occurred to me that these are two businesses, family-owned businesses, long-established, that wouldn't that they added something new to their portfolio. I mean, here's Sazerac House, here's a liquor company, and all of a sudden it's developing a museum very effectively, and here you are, a clothing business developing a hotel. First of all, good for both of you. I think you've done fantastic jobs. But I'm very impressed with that.
Well, I mean, Jeffrey's multi-generational like I am, and you've got to, I mean, you don't last 100 years by being the same. You've got to see what's going on. You've got to add, you've got to build, you've got to change. Sometimes it's tearing down and redoing or renovating, but that's the most important part of surviving 100 years is being able to adapt and see what's out there and make that change. And I think the Sazerac House was a great addition. It like we do, it celebrates their history, and adds to the economic development of the city and makes Canal Street a little nicer. And that's the same concept we had back there. We said we've got all this 43,000 square feet, and we were using like 12,000. A lot of space. Let's make it fresh and new. And now it is. It's beautiful and gorgeous, and every inch is generating income in the city.
Well, I guess we're talking about the many good things about the Sac Canal Street. To me, the one eyesore, and it's a problem because it's such a big building, is the building that was the Lowe's State Theater. It's been sitting
Oh.
there a long time, just blank facade, and it's really, boy, I wish something could happen to it.
Yeah, well, there's a few places that still need some work. Part of the thing and part of the work the DDD does is, you've got a lot of these properties where they're multiple property owners in that block, and they've got to work together in some cases to get things improved. And that's one of the things DDD has done great at. And they have worked towards improving that. There's just a couple of the recent things have fallen through, but it's about developing cooperation. And and that sometimes can take a while, and I think that's you're right. I mean, there's lots of great ideas out there, but everybody has to agree to it and has to look at it from the perspective of what can be done. I mean, and I think sometimes when you look at historic buildings and things like that, you got to understand that what is better, an eyesore or something new, or something that we can collaborate on that will add to everybody's benefit. And that can be challenging, especially with politics and different interest groups involved. It becomes difficult.
Well, even if money and politics were not an issue, I'm not sure what you could do with that building. I mean, it was a big theater. It was really huge, but you just don't need that kind of, really, you don't need a theater downtown anymore. I mean, we're blessed with the Sanger and the Orpheum in proximity, and Mahalia Jackson's not too far away. I don't know what to do with that building.
Well, but that's the problem. I mean, you get, it's hard to come up with a use for that as it is, so it needs to change. And one of the benefits of the city is that we are great. We love our historic things and we take care of them. And I mean, there's very few cities you can go into and you can just walk in. There may be one old building over here. That building was built back in 19 something. But here, all the buildings, practically all the buildings in this area are old and have been around for a while. But there's some things that can be saved and some things you just have to move on from. And I think it's hard to get down. I mean, we have the oldest building in the city right across the street from us down there. But I mean, it's hard to explain, and it is frustrating. And I think it really comes down to, well, the word I like to use is relationships for everything. I mean, it's about relationships, and it takes a long time to build some relationships that'll eventually lead to cooperation, which will allow things to be
Yeah.
built up. Because it's frustrating, and I don't know a solution.
Yeah, if something like was a grand old building that closed and you're trying to look for it, well, at least the grand old building had floors to it, had different levels. The theater is just this big open space.
Big open, exactly. Very hard to fit things in there.
However, there are some successes, and so let's talk a little bit about the hotel. The hotel opened at the end of January. It combines six businesses. Is that correct?
Six buildings. Our property is six buildings, five in the front that you see from Canal, and then one in the back that's a St. Charles building. And, you know, that's an excellent example of taking something old and renovating it into something new while still capturing the essence of that historic look and everything. And, yeah, so basically the hotel takes up a part of that building on the first floor in the back lobby, and then you have basically it occupies all the second and third floor, so with 40 rooms. And it's I think it's amazing the way it came out. I think it's beautiful.
Now, were those buildings in the early days, were they all different
yeah.
businesses? Or
that's one of the key things in our history is my grandfather making the decision to buy these buildings, and he bought them over time. So basically, we started off in the middle of the St. Charles building, the building that faces Canal, but runs all the way down St. Charles there, and eventually bought that building. Then bought the building that faces St. Charles, then the third building on Canal. So we had a U. First was an L, and it was a U. Then we bought the middle building, and we bought the fifth building. So now we had like an E, and then bought the last building. So, I mean, It was multiple stores. As I said, there was a jewelry store one time. There was a bank. There was a shirt, some cigars. So it's been several things. In fact, our favorite story is about when we tore the wall down between, I think it was the third and fourth building. The fourth building was a bank. And we found a gun with one bullet that had been fired, and it was all rusted and eaten away. Nothing we could tell, but it was in the wall. Why? I don't know. Unfortunately, there were no gold coins or bills in there either. Just a gun.
Yeah. Wow.
Never know.
So has the idea of building a hotel been around for a long time? I mean, has the company been eyeing that happening one day, or did you just?
Not necessarily a hotel. Yeah. We've always had all this property. And we've wanted to put as much of it as we can into use. So over time, we've talked about different things, you know, maybe we could rent this to this, maybe a company, but it's hard to sell your second floor, you know, unless you give up first floor. We didn't really want to give up our retail space down there. So different conversations came up. And at one point, we've talked about apartments. We've talked about condos. We talked about, funny story is in eighth grade at Newman for architecture history class, I did a project in which I converted all the buildings into condominiums. I think it was six condos or seven condos. I can't remember. While leaving the retail space on the first floor, so that was back when I was in eighth grade. I had the concept coming, but over time we talked about different things, and we had my father's good friend Joe Yeager. We approached him just to ask him what kind of thoughts he had, and he did present us some ideas of how an apartment could go, a hotel, and condos, and kind of, so we had some numbers and things to look at. But Joe wasn't interested at that time. And then a few years later, he came back to us and said, you know what? You're still interested in doing something? I'd love to help you do a hotel. So that's essentially how it came to be.
Well, that says something about the brightness of the kids at Newman to be doing that kind of thing, you know?
That's right.
When I was in eighth grade, my class was probably thinking about flying to the moon or something, you know, some of the...
That's right. No, that was Dr. White. He was telling on me.
So what is what's your next big idea?
Oh.
Or have you had enough right now? I just want to...
a pool on the roof? No, that's a... Mm-hmm. That's not yet. Well, it's a good question. And we constantly talk about that. I think our next focus is on technological advances. There's a lot of things going on out there from always talk about AI to just things on your phones and everybody's saying, and how we can really capture a customer through those channels. Not necessarily online. I think, you know, we don't need to be out there selling online as much as being able to just reach our customer and develop our customer through the technological advances. I can't tell you there's not a day that goes by I don't get an email about the magic mirror, this electronic sizing program, or this that I can add, and they'll help my customer decide exactly what fit is best for them and things like that. So it's a lot to think through and to look at, because it's not about adding technology because it's technology, even though I love technology myself. It's got to benefit our customers. It's got to make our customers' lives easier and assist them. We're not about having a machine tell somebody what to do. That's our job. Mm-hmm. But we want to make it easier to be able to communicate and build that relationship with customers. So I think that's our focus at the moment. After that, we have to look at, maybe there's other locations. Maybe we'll find another spot. There's lots of places in the city that need a Rubenstein, right?
Well, okay. When you contact that person, it seems like somewhere in the transaction, something's going to be done online.
Well, we obviously have a website for people to sign up. They can sign up for the style session. They can see what we do with photos and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking at, I want the ability. We go to offices, we go to people's houses, we go to events. I'd like the ability to be able to, have that communication, show up at their house and be able to be like, this is what I have. I can bring stuff, but I can also, show them things and connections with our vendors. I mean, the technology is getting where I can see what a vendor has on hand, at any moment, and be able to tell them, this is what, I can get for you, or I can do. I mean, even this whole conversation, we talked about formal, and a customer coming in today and needing the formal shirt for a white with the wingtip. I mean, I can get on the online. I can see that I have got that available. I can get it from Eaton, and I can call and have it sent overnight and have it here. So that's part of it. But I mean, our real main focus now is our hotel and our 100 years. We're going to get through that, get that hotel up and running full speed, and savor our 100 years. Yeah. And then we're going to sit back and see what's next for our next 100 years.
Are you all doing anything special for the 100 years?
Not at the moment. I mean, besides our, we got a lot of internal things, with logoing and all that good stuff. But we will, through the next 12 months, the next two seasons, we will have little events from our trunk shows and things like that, and celebrate it each and every day on different things, whether we have a cake cutting one weekend to maybe special vendors or visits. I'm hoping to get the tailor from Brioni to come over and hand sew, some stuff for you, things like that. We're working on different projects, but check our website for that.
Okay. Just tell me, how many members of your family are actively involved now?
Yeah, well, we're loaded. We had my father and my uncle are here. My aunt and my cousin, Allison, are also here. So we've got five of us work. It's half our workforce. Okay, not quite half. But no, we got there's a scene everywhere. So we love the business, and I mean that's part of this. This is a family endeavor. It's not just a single store owner. So that's part of what makes it special when you get to work with your family.
Yeah. Well, again, congratulations to your family and for their commitment to the city and the commitment to downtown. And hey, it's exciting. Something exciting that you all. Oh, and you all are opening a bar in the new hotel.
Yeah, that's weird. Bars, the Madison Shop Bar, which harkens back to our Madison Shop, which we opened, back a few decades ago. The concept being that, the kids didn't want to shop in their father's store. So we created a separate entrance in the Madison Shop so they could go shop at the Madison Shop, which wasn't their father's store. It was a store they could call their own. And that was the concept. And that's what actually built our big European-based brands, where we started. We were the first ones to carry Zegna in the country, Italian, the top Italian brand, and it grew from there. So the Madison Shop Bar will harken back to those days of something special.
Mm-hmm. Well, those kids will probably all grown up now and would welcome a drink. We welcome
exactly. Have a reunion back at the Madison Shop Bar. Okay. I'm sure you'll find some boys there afterward.
Kenny, thank you very much. It's been a delight. Okay.
Earl, it's been terrific. I enjoyed talking to you, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Louisiana Insider. Subscribe, like, and rate our show where you listen to your podcasts, and follow us on social media at Louisiana Life Mag. Executive producer for Louisiana Insider is Kelly Massico, in cooperation with Louisiana Life Magazine. For subscription information to Louisiana Life, call 504-828-1380. Our theme music was provided by Rich Collins. Hey, that's me. Join us again next week for more discoveries inside Louisiana.